Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Duststorm.
And I'm your other host, Biowolf.
We're here for another episode of Hunt the Truth. We are about halfway through as E3 approaches. Episode 7 just got released this past weekend, and we are counting down the days to E3. We have about 6 weeks left, and we're at episode 7, so this looks like we're hitting about 13 Hunt the Truth episodes. So we've hit the halfway point, and there's some pretty interesting developments so far. And it is just me and Bio tonight. We don't have Haas or GT on for now. It's actually nice. It's a little less crowded. I have a little more elbow room right now, so to speak. No offense to those guys, but it's nice to have a little bit of extra room to talk. Let's just go ahead and cover a couple of posts on the Hunt the Truth website, and then we'll dive right into the new episode itself. So one of the things that we got before this last show, everyone had their audio submissions, so we actually have a little screenshot of what supposedly is Ben's voicemail box, and it's just a list of voicemails, and the one that he's currently listening to is the one from Sully. And it's 3,229th out of 999999999 messages. Like, his mailbox is freaking full of messages.
Yeah, it's just a little jam-packed. Yeah, you clear it out a little bit. Could you imagine going through all those?
No.
And the thing is, just like, you wouldn't be able to not get through them, because that 99999, whatever, it would still be full. He'd get through that, and then he would have millions more pile in. Like, there's no end. It would be no end.
Well, and remember from last week, we had just so many people calling in and talking about their tales of what they thought of his podcast, what they think about Oni and the Chief and all that stuff.
Right.
It's a lot of people to go through, and this is the whole thing where he's making up his ideas about what Oni could possibly be hiding, and how Dion Govender really wasn't the guy who he said he was, and all that stuff. There's just, imagine the massive amounts of voicemails that are 30 seconds to a minute long, and you have 900 or 99,999, however that extends past that, to go through that many voice messages. And judging by what he said on the podcast, he's going through pretty much all of them. I mean, that's insane.
Yeah, that's insane doesn't quite cover that. Like, that's like going out of your way to do something that you're just going to get bashed about. Like, the emotional draw that he's going to get from this is like, not only is it it's going to drain him energy wise, but mentally and physically, because he had to sit there and think. He's looking at a computer screen or a tablet this entire time, and you're 30 seconds each. I mean, do the math. What is that? 2 or 3, 4 days going through all these? Like, that's quite a lot.
And he said that he'd been going through them for several days already.
Yeah. So
it's ridiculous to even think about.
Yeah, that's more power to him. I would never do it. I listen to the first 50 and be like, all right, well, this is where it's going. You're probably going to be getting repeats. So yeah, the rest trash.
At this point, though, you're thinking that there's so much that he's trying to figure out about his story, because his story is already in shambles, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You have so much just hanging in the balance with things not matching up between Ellie Bloom's story and then all the Oni provided sources, everything that he's heard from the other colonies now with all these voicemails, and just trying to get a clear picture of what the truth actually is. And he mentioned earlier when Mashak, or he first reached out to Mashak about reaching through the sludge of communications and finding like the little gems of information. He's basically has his own sludge now to sift through and try to find all the info out of it.
Another thing that would probably pop up in my mind too is like, what other messages are like under all these that would make it to like Oni messages, or someone that's really trying to make an, like, that could really help him out or really make a huge impact on his life. It's like, where could you sort through all that? You'd have to look through every single one, you know, especially if it's like a general or someone from naval intelligence that could sit there and really mess up his life. And
right,
like, you can't really look through names because there's probably about 2 million names that are going through there. So you have to look for the one that you could possibly, I mean, maybe type and search, but I don't know.
Something else to note, kind of, and I don't think this is really leads to anything, but if Soli's message is 3,229th in line, how many freaking messages are before that? Because people didn't start calling, really, until after Soli started posting the podcast. And he didn't post the podcast until, or sorry, Ben. And Ben didn't post the podcast until after that last call from Soli.
Yeah, I don't know. Holy crap.
You know, Oni was calling him, but oh, I don't absolutely. Think they would have called him that many times. So you figure maybe 100 or so of those might be Oni, but has he like kept all of his voicemails since ever?
I don't know.
I mean, how many voicemails do you expect to get in your lifetime? Really?
Apparently quite a few.
I don't know if this is just for perspective or why 300 or why 3,229th is Soli's and then you just have the barrage of everyone else.
Well, I'm sure that he has a well connection with a lot of people. I mean, he is a journalist and I'm sure he has a lot of people that are reaching out to him, getting information out to him that could possibly help him in some sort of way. Let it be a past project or let it be an old journal that he written up on somebody that they were probably just going to give him information saying, well, what you say wasn't necessarily right, but this is where you could find it or something around those lines. Like, I'm sure that he has a decent clientele of where he would get a lot of messages from just random people.
I agree. It's just you think about that and it's like, how do you expect to live with just being inundated with that many messages for one? And then I guess kind of the journalism aspect, you do want to keep all your sources at some point in case you ever need to refer back to them. So
exactly.
If he's keeping all of his voicemails, then that might be another case why. But just an interesting little side note. I don't think it is really any deep meaning behind it, but it was just something that I noticed.
Well, another thing is, it's like if Oni was trying to get to him, I'm sure that was spreading like wildfire. They know it was. When they've tried to reach him in some other way, you know what I mean? Like something like maybe, I don't know, completely overtake his tablet or computer or something like that and have like a face-on-face conversation, like hack their way in or something.
So you think if what we know from the last podcast with Mashok being in there, he may be putting up some, like when he hacked into Ben's stuff, he may have put up some defenses for Oni to not be able to get past as well.
It's true.
Possible.
Yeah, but the thing is that Oni could have been someone acting out as, like maybe it was a file that they could have sent as like a voicemail or something. It could have been infected. He could have infected his computer and completely brought it up. Like there's a lot of things. Like this is a couple hundred thousand years like away from what we are. So like it could be, there could be a lot of technology that we haven't even come to fathom that they could have come up with by then. So I'm sure somewhere along the line, somewhere could have done something, but you know, we don't know Mashok. Like, he's a little genius in himself.
And there's, stuff like that you can't really know. I mean, with a science fiction or science fantasy universe, however you decide to consider the Halo universe right now, if you look at just the possibility of technology, yeah, there's a bunch of different possibilities there, and there's so many things that we could throw at. Yeah, they could have done this, they could have done this. And you just, at this point, you would just kind of take the story as is because, you know, there's also the thing that I think I brought up last time or the time before, but you have someone like Ben who's always done what they've been asked to do the whole time. There's not really much reason to question his motives until one day it's just like, oh, well, that wasn't expected.
Yeah, you just bring a storm of randomness to the party.
It's like you entrust someone with goods for decades, and then it's like all of a sudden you just completely miss a shipment that someone was supposed to be responsible for, and then he's just like gone.
Yeah,
it's like, oh well, that wasn't expected.
Yeah,
and at this point he's in the Outer Colonies, he's back at home, so he's not exactly in immediate arm's reach of Oni. Granted, he could be, but at this point Oni's probably scrambling at trying to figure out what's the best strategic action for them to take. And judging by some of the stuff that we've heard in this new episode of Hunt the Truth, they might not be in exactly the position of power they seem to be.
Nope. Which is surprising.
Being Oni, very surprising.
Yeah.
So the next post that we had before we get to the episode, which actually is part of the episode, is an ad for a warthog, a Civi warthog.
That was awesome.
Remember the ad for the hog on, what was it, Headlong? Was it Headlong?
Yeah, yep.
I don't know if this is the, like, supposed to be the same hog, like the gold Civi hog, but I would assume this is probably along those lines.
I'm sure.
It's an ad for, like, you would see a poster ad for a Ford F-150 or whatever. It's that kind of same thing, just a print ad.
Right.
For a 2556 hog.
We've seen the hog, the civil or citizen hog or whatever in Halo 2 Anniversary too. The gold with the it's all blinged out.
Which
with the,
looks ugly, to be perfectly honest. That thing looks ugly.
I'd rather have the military look, honestly. Yep. I don't like the bling bling and whatever you want to call it. It has rims and it has a gold paint job. It's like, no.
Like the hog in this ad looks a lot better than that.
Oh yeah.
Blinged out hog.
Yeah.
So it was interesting.
It was different.
It wouldn't be a car I would forge. I wouldn't even consider forging with it, to be honest.
It does the job. I guess, it's an eyesore to me, but it does the job.
Yeah. There's a little blog up the text in here. I just want to read it because, I mean, given what we hear in the podcast, it's kind of funny. So, your golden opportunity has arrived. The first-in-class military vehicle is finally available in a limited civilian edition. Trans-system GPS, multi-user voice control, premium surround sound, and enough power to unleash your wildest dreams in luxury.
Own one today for $472,000. But, I don't know. Or credits, or whatever credits. You want to... Credits.
Yeah.
You can own a house with this, but... Yeah, I think it was a pretty unique way of doing that, kind of showing that it was an actor and it was the exact same person that he was talking to, and he did a really good job with it. It was just a different twist coming from that, which I think is cool. I think I like seeing more city, like actual people stuff in the Halo universe. Like, and we always get the like everything going on in Galaxy, the military stuff like that. I think that's the reason why I kind of clung to ODST a little more than I've clung to anything else, because we see the city, you're inside the city, you're seeing this abandoned place where all these civilian cars and the runways and all these different things. Like, we live our lives as civilians, we don't see any of that stuff, so kind of making that connection was really unique. Like, I like that a lot.
It's relatable.
Yeah,
it's comfort. So whenever you think about that kind of stuff, it just fits a lot better.
Yep.
And that's one of the reasons why I think a lot of people really clung on to ODST, and I did as well. That's, in my opinion, the best campaign of the franchise.
Yep. Yeah, that was far my favorite campaign. Like, story-wise, I think it was my favorite. I mean, you're going to have all these people are saying, well, what about Chief and all that stuff? Like, that Halo 1 was classic. Like, you can't really compare Halo 1 or Halo 2 or Halo 3 to Halo 4 or anything like that. Like, ODST was its own unique story in the huge expansive universe that Halo was in. Like, it was just in a time, different time, at where Chief was off shooting everything and beating grunts in the head and doing all that crazy stuff. Like, you have these little ODSTs that were in their own little mission trying to get past their day without getting killed. So it was a different outtake on it, which was neat.
So you will enjoy New Blood a lot. Then once you finally get around to reading it, you will enjoy it a lot.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I've heard that a couple times.
I just finished it this past week, and it's pretty good.
Okay.
I still need to reach out to, because a couple of people actually are not quite settled with it. They didn't like some of the portrayals that it was made in the book on certain things. So I need to reach out to a few people and kind of see why they think about certain things the way they do. But I thought it was a very good book. Heck, that book being the kind of the story behind Buck. And I think I'm pretty much going to say it's safe to say now that Buck is likely that person in Locke's fire team. I mean, there's really no other person that is going to be wearing an ODST helmet. So just for all cases, I'm just going to say that's Buck for now. Having Buck in Halo 5, I felt that New Blood was a lot better of an origin story than Nightfall was for Locke by miles.
Well, I mean, you got to look at it this way, too. I mean, Buck, as a person, it seems to be a well-thought-out character compared to what Locke is. We don't know too much about Locke. I mean, we've said this 100 times on different podcasts, but like, we don't know who he really is as a person. Like, that portrayal of him in Nightfall did not do him justice in any way. I mean, he could be completely different than what we've seen him in Nightfall and character-wise. But we know Buck as Nathan Fillion. Like, that's Nathan Fillion's voice. It's his face, basically. So like, you have all these things, and we have, if you're a Nathan Fillion fan, you know how his humor is, and he kind of matches that in ODST. So he has this really likable, really awesome personality, and then like, he's funny. He makes things funny. With Locke, you didn't have that character development of, oh, well, he's too serious. You know, you showed him as a soldier caring about other things. Yeah, sure, that's great. But to really capture the audience's eye, I think you got to have some sort of humor. Like, even Chief has somewhat of a humor side to him.
Yeah, but even with that, there's a lot of things that just, between Nightfall and all the little clips that we've seen with Locke so far, it feels like two different people.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you have this competitive drive to get his mission done, and like ODST, or ODST, and like what we're seeing from Halo 5, like all these trailers, like you have these trailers, you have these, you know, glimpses of what he's doing, Halo 2 Anniversary with these cutscenes, like he's committed to getting his duty or his job done, regardless of what's going to happen. I mean, you have Buck is going to sit there and make things unique as he's going to get his job done. Like, if things get in the way, they're going to get in the way. Then you continue on with it later. Chief is dedicated to doing what he wants to do. But like, in Nightfall, it was just completely different. Like, he didn't have that. He had that drive, but it wasn't the same as what we're seeing in Halo 5, it seems. I mean, we're just going to have to wait to play the campaign story and all that stuff, but it's not looking like that.
The person that we saw in Nightfall, I don't think there's going to be much of a resemblance of that character in the final game.
No.
Other than the fact that it is Locke, but as far as the personality, it seemed, and this is just from the few things that we have seen so far, it just seems that the personality types are very different. Just between what we saw in Nightfall and then his conversations with the Arbiter in the extra cutscenes for Halo 2 Anniversary, those were degrees different in approach.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, like, the seriousness of that whole situation was completely different. I mean, he was fighting for survival. Like, I think that's the reason what they were going for. They just didn't tell the story. As a survival situation, he was more caring. You know, he was willing to help people in, you know, situations. And, that's why they showed the other ODST or the other ONI operatives. Like, they were going to sit there and kill him. Like, they didn't care. They were going to sit there and get what they want. They wanted to live before anybody else did. You know, they did a whole bunch of really evil stuff. But it's like, as Locke as a character, he's going to sit there and make sure that he's going to help everybody that he can. And if willing, put his life before others to do that. And in this, it doesn't look like that at all. Like, he's aggressive. He's going to sit there and almost seemingly going to kill anybody in his way. And no one's going to stop him.
Right. Good old ONI brainwashing. Probably not quite brainwashing, but you get the point.
Yeah.
So, on to the episode, the actual episode itself. We have, at the very kind of tail end of the last podcast, where the big reveal that Dion Govender actually died 7 years ago, and that Mashaq had hacked Ben's stuff for a while, and he'd been monitoring him, and Pharaoh, this weird person that he'd never heard of, that none of them had heard of, the one guy that Mashaq didn't really know until recently either, we have her that was supposed to reach out to Ben, and she never did, and Ben was kind of lost and confused with not hearing from anyone for a few days, because the last time that he really talked to anybody was when they discovered that Dion was no longer alive. And that was at the start of the podcast 3 days ago, and Ben had been just constantly trying to get a hold of Mashaq, and he'd been getting these pre-recorded messages, and they're kind of funny.
They are. Ah, you think this is Mashaq? He was just, it was funny. Like, the first time I hear it, and like his reaction to it was priceless. I used to say, I want to get a hold of him. I'm going to kill him. I'm going to have to kill him.
He was funny. So frustrated.
Yeah. Oh, and I mean, put yourself in his situation. I mean, I would be frustrated too. I would be a little bit more paranoid, but I would be flustered as well.
Yeah. One of the things that he mentioned in the podcast was he didn't know if something happened to Mashaq or if it was just leaving him in the dark or what, because it's been 3 days since everyone was in the room together. And the last thing that he heard was, this Farad person is about to get in touch with you. No reason to reach out to her. And that was it. Just Mike dead, everything gone. Yep. And all this time he's thinking, did something happen to Mashaq? Is he all right? Did something happen to Petra and Ray? Are they possibly all right? Haven't heard from them either. They did their goodbyes and separated themselves off, which he reiterated again, he thought was the right thing for them to do, get away from the whole mess of things. And he's just sitting there and it's like, I don't know what to do anymore. I have this hole of Dion, and I have this supposed person that's supposed to help me kind of build and break the story, but I haven't heard anything in 3 days. What the heck is going on? So you can sense a little bit of frustration, maybe a little bit of paranoia in Ben during this podcast, and just everything is not working out really well right now.
No. I'm sure Halo was played a lot during those time periods between that. You know, maybe a little bit of a Spartan Strike on his tablet, but no, I mean, I'm sure he was probably going out of his mind. You know, you're expecting these things. Time is not on your side on this. I mean, you're itching to find out anything else, you know, and Mashaq taunting you like that doesn't help.
No. And then
didn't he like change up the voice message too? Like in that one point, like he's like, oh, I'm so glad you got through or something like that. I forgot exactly how it went, but it was just a message.
Once it hit, I guess he had some stuff on a timer, because there was one message where had something in there and you heard it like a AI voice say 71 hours. So I'm guessing when it hit that 72 hour mark, he's like, oh, I'm glad you finally got through, so I could rub it in your face that you're behind 3 days.
Yeah. He's a prankster.
You could tell just by the initial contact that he's a prankster.
Oh, yeah.
He's hacking all the Oni systems and all that stuff. He meddles in stuff. He's going to be that kind of personality type.
Mm-hmm.
It is strange, though, that after everything that he's done to kind of make his voice known to Ben, because he was constantly poking Ben during the whole story, and then when Ben finally reached out to him, he was just like dumping all this info on him and then hacking into his system and constantly having a listening ear. And then when Petra and Ray were by, saying, hey, guys, and then all of a sudden just not being there.
Yep. He was just the quiet dude that was just stalking your computer. No big deal. And then like, I'm just in that, knowing that he was in there. And I'm sure it's like, I wonder if he really was there just listening to see how frustrated he could get him. he was there the entire time. Those messages are just playing just because he's trying to get a hold of him.
So I think there may be a reason for that. And I think that has in part to do with what Pharaoh said at the end of the episode. And I think at this point, we're just going to jump around just to jump around. But at the very end, because at this point, Mashaq has talked to Ray because he got some new info about Jacob Walker, and he had talked to Anthony Petrovsky, and this was the ODST who was in the gym with John when they got slaughtered.
Before you actually go into that, there was one sentence in that whole ordeal, the train your soldier by painting the blood of my I can't exactly remember how it went, but it was basically just saying that you're going to sit there and train and on our guys to get what you want done. Like, that was really deep in that conversation that he had with him.
It was unsettling.
Yeah, like that was showing a little bit more of a darker side of like Chief, like that whole sense of the humanity's racer is going to be like before anything, and you're going to sit there and completely annihilate my guys just for your pleasure of getting more information. Like, that was really, really dark. Like, I know kidnapping kids and genetically augmenting them and all these different things is bad, but like, when you put it that way, like, you're really making it out to where these guys are horrible.
And this is all stuff that we know from reading the books too.
Yeah,
it puts it in perspective though, I think, for people, because it's done in a certain viewpoint in the books where you're training Spartans, you're training this elite group of soldiers that's supposed to be kind of this all-out force. And I have to go back and read the book again, because I know the first time I read Fall of Reach was, gosh knows how many years ago it was. But having a little bit deeper understanding now, and then being able to go and kind of associate different things, the tone that the book is written in, from what I remember, is more just kind of from the perspective of the kids and the Spartans. You don't really get that other perspective, which is now what we're getting. So we know the facts, but the perspective puts an interesting twist on it. I know for maybe you and me, we kind of have had those thoughts in the back of our mind before, but I'm wondering for other people if it's something that, oh, I never really thought about it that way, about how other people were actually affected by the Spartan program.
Yeah, I mean, that's just one incident. You know, it just makes you wonder what other things actually happened. How many people were maybe killed, injured, or even emotionally scarred from just something to keep, like an experiment. Like, these were just things to help keep humanity safe, but it's like sacrificing that just so you can get more information is, you shouldn't do that. Like, that's the reason why there's simulations. There's the reason why there's dummies, there's different things like that. You don't do what you do to a human on that. And it makes you wonder, like, this too. It's like, what was going through Chief's head? Like, what was he thinking on that whole situation? He was taking orders.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no explanation of the discipline that he would have gotten if he didn't obey. You know, it's like, there's, and I'm sure brainwashing was the huge part in that whole situation. I mean, there was a part when he said where he heard him scream and almost cry. It makes me wonder if that was him trying to retaliate.
If you read the books, though, it wasn't necessarily even a brainwashing technique, because one of the things of like having the kids on that early is just the influence that they have. And I mean, Dr. Halsey took extremely good care of them and acted like a mother figure to them.
Right.
So it's more like behavioral training, if anything, than brainwashing.
Right.
Because it was all free will. She gave all the kids the option to go forward with this, if you read the books.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, like, it's really crazy. Like, I'm loving, they're doing such a great job with this. I'm loving the fact that we're getting all these details that are really backing to what, like, the people, the lore nuts, the people that that know what's going on in the past. Like, all these questions that are kind of not getting answered, but kind of seeing the other coin of sorts. Granted, Hunt the Truth in a way. Like, it's just crazy that they're making all these connections for things that people probably will never ever see, because they don't want to read a book, or they don't want to go back and take the time to understand what's going on.
Right. Jumping back a little bit, one of the things after Ben's failed attempts, many failed attempts of trying to contact Mashaak, was he actually got a phone call from Ray Herzig, the kind of the freelancer guy that did a couple of lookups for him. And he actually reached out to Ben wanting to grab a drink. And Ben says in the podcast, Ray isn't the kind of person to go out and have, just ask to have a drink, saying that kind of indicates that Ray found something that spooked him. And now the thoughts are running through his head, oh boy, did something happen to him now? So they managed to meet up at kind of a steak dive bar, I think is what I heard.
Like a steakhouse, and I guess you can call it.
Right. Someplace that's very loud, that can hide the noise. And he says that Ray is aware that I am recording.
that was funny.
Made it very clear to say that he is aware that I am recording.
Yeah.
Which, after everything that he did with Petro and Ray, having them in the podcast, it was probably at least a good idea to let them know that, yes, it's okay to record. But one of the things that he had pulled up was someone else that Ray had talked to try to dig some more information about Walker, was waiting for some leads to come through, some things to check out. And one of the things that Ray brought up about Walker is that his military record still checked out. Everything looked good. And there was some exchange, I forget what exactly happened, but Ben said something along the lines of, yeah, Oni controls all the military records. And Ray says, well, almost all of it. Apparently there's some system in the back end that isn't controlled by Oni that has to deal with whenever you come on board to join the military, that you have to sign an affidavit that you are joining voluntarily. And that system isn't controlled by Oni. And that system is supposed to take anyone who is registered and is in active duty after 180 days of retiring, is supposed to automatically move their military status to retired. Well, he didn't have a military status of any kind. He wasn't active duty. He wasn't even retired. As Ben put it, an admin snafu, something that Ray caught them in, just completely out of the blue, something that should have been just one of those checkbox things, only completely missed, and now there's full evidence to support that Jacob Walker was, in fact, not in the military whatsoever. In fact, the poster that we talked about, the hog advertisement, Ray used a voice print from Ben's podcast to match that up to an auto sales commercial that was voiced by Jacob Walker. So he is a professional voice actor.
Mm-hmm. That was cool. That kind of connected with me a lot, because that's kind of something I want to do. So like when I heard that, I'm like, that's crazy. That was really good that they pulled it off like that. It just kind of shows where you could honestly see where people are with things like that. I mean, like the fact that he's acting this person that has nothing to even do with him at all. Like he even said that he was a little shady, like the way he was talking, or was it us that were saying that he was a little bit shady? I don't exactly remember, but like I remember things didn't really pan out the way they should have, or like the way they looked didn't really work the way it should have. It was weird. It was different.
Are you talking about whenever he saw him on the plane?
Yeah.
That was definitely awkward, because you heard him talking to the stewardess, and then you could hear him have the little voice change, and even Ben mentioned it in the podcast. He said, now there's the Walker I remember, and you can hear the voice change, really.
Yeah, I mean, you have these people that talk like this, and then you can talk like this. Like they put in a, that's what the voice actors are paid for. They have that initial like instinct to get like your voice ready, like to kind of energetically enhance it.
Right.
It was pretty cool to see that.
It made me miss Brent. Because, I mean, I've said this, and I know other people have said this too. He has that perfect, like, announcer radio voice. He really does.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, he did. He had the perfect voice of that. I mean, like, and you don't usually find that too often when you do. So it's kind of like you struck gold in a way.
I miss Brent.
We need to get him on one of these days. He's going to come to talk about it.
That was just one of the things that when I saw that commercial, I thought of Brent. So it would be nice to get them back. I actually called him, or tried calling him earlier today, and I ended up leaving a message because I wanted to talk to him about some RTX stuff that we have going on, which hopefully we will be able to tell you guys here pretty soon. But back on point, Walker, completely not who he said he was either, being a voice actor, being completely fake. And at that point, Ben said he actually felt human for once. Like they were laughing so much about the situation at hand. They were just sitting down having drinks and just completely laughing over what happened.
Having a good old time.
Yeah. He later goes on in the podcast to say that Walker's claim of John entering boot camp at 16, now that is even pulled into question of when did, like, you have that part of John's background, John's story, completely out. And that was one thing that no one else really talked about when he entered boot camp. I think Walker was probably the only one that mentioned a specific age, but then you have a lot of the other stuff past the age of six has already been discredited. And this, I guess, was one of those things that kind of hung in the balance. So now that thing is cleared out of the way, making even more space for what happens next. And he said there was one person that he had to try to go back and talk to, and that was Anthony Petrovsky. That was the ODST, that one of four that fought John in the ring, where two of them died. One had his
spine crushed.
Right. Permanently paralyzed. And then I guess he was the one that got caught in the groin. I forget.
Yeah. Something like that. He got jacked up. Got messed up.
So he calls him out, and Ben starts apologizing right away for not even believing his story, for just completely discrediting it, saying that he didn't really know what to think about at the time. Anthony's just like, just don't get sappy with me.
Yeah.
Let's just cut straight to the point. He had actually listened to some of Ben's episodes. He was very much aware of the Oni influence back there, and he found it kind of entertaining that they were using the outer colony, have bad records, having that as kind of a cover up to some of the other stuff. And he found that kind of entertaining. He also mentioned that how the outer colonies are really chewing up and really digesting the podcast that he's put out. So it's obviously being well received, which is good.
Yeah.
Yep. Despite all the threatening phone calls that we heard from the last episode, it seems like a lot of the people in the outer colonies are like, wow, it's actually good to have this information, just this view on the Spartans that we've never even had before.
Right.
And the more they kept talking, there was one thing that Ben didn't want to ask. He knew he didn't want to ask, but he had to ask it anyway. And he knew it would be like the rabbit hole that he wanted to stay away from as far as possible. And that was the Spartan program. What was it?
Right. I mean, they were basically like told us hush, hush. Like, you're not supposed to say a word about the Spartan program to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then he goes, they're out exploring the universe, and then we have to bow down and kiss their feet. You know, it's like, it was, what was so secretive? You know, why was it such a secret? All these different things about that didn't really add up. They just didn't add up at all. Like I said, going back to the whole situation of seeing the other side, it was interesting to see that. You know, I think Anthony Petrovsky's character in this, I think, has been the most interesting so far, because he has the more negative approach of Chief, like he of the Spartans. Like, he doesn't really see them as who we see them as. Like, they're always portrayed as these world heroes, these saviors that's saved all of our lives countless times. And it's like, yeah, well, guess what? My brothers, the people I've been in war with, they got their faces punched and the spines shattered, and one of them's in a wheelchair, and that's what the Spartan program did for me. So get on my level is basically what he's saying. Like, and I like that. I like the other end of what we're receiving from that.
It's very dark.
Yeah.
Very much how you wouldn't expect a war veteran to really think about their motherland type of thing. The organization that they fought so long for, just feeling betrayed after all that time. It's something that is very influential. And talking to Anthony about all of his experiences, you could just feel the emotion just kind of swelling up whenever he was talking about all this stuff. And it's almost like you could hear him try to not just like punch something, because he was so frustrated and so mad at what actually happened to him. And granted, he's divulging the info because he wants that info out there. He told Ben he didn't really care what UNSC or Oni did to him. How much worse could life get after being permanently immobilized by one of their pet projects, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
He mentioned that he had a titanium arm that he had to deal with, and he was living paycheck to paycheck. If he missed a paycheck, he basically would be on the streets. And he said to Ben, you'd be better off living in a shelter than living in the state that he lives in.
Right. He's also saying that he was eating protein cans or something like that, or
yeah, protein shakes or something like that every day. That was his food intake.
That's disgusting. Protein shakes are nasty. Like, I can't imagine what they're like then. I mean, they're nasty now. I couldn't imagine eating that as an everyday meal. Like, there's no really, apart from protein, there's not really a nutritional value in that either. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that he's not exactly he's kind of weak.
Right. After going through all of that, not even getting kind of the upper class living that he probably deserves for going through something as hellacious as the receiving end of a Spartan fight, living in the current state that he is now, I don't blame him for not having anything to worry about when it comes to Oni. It sounds like he's already living in hell. How much more hell could they put him through?
Right. I mean, there's not much you can do. I mean, unless you're physically torturing the guy, I don't think it could be that much worse.
Right. One of the interesting and probably key points that I pulled out of that podcast was a line where Anthony said he didn't view the Spartans as neither a hero or a person that everyone else seems to think of the Spartans.
Right.
And that strikes a chord, because that's kind of goes along the lines of what we've heard Mashak say, the discontent in the outer colonies, how people have just are not happy with the situation that Chief is kind of out there on his own. And then just given Anthony's situation, how there were people that were ruthlessly injured and slaughtered for this science experiment that Oni had to make these Spartans, to build these Spartans, and how these kids that were kidnapped were basically engineered killing machines.
Right.
You take a lot of the stuff that you have, the augmentations, you have probably what they consider the brainwashing aspect of it too. And he admits that they're just following their orders. They're just doing what they've been told to do.
Exactly. So
the black eye should really be on Oni, and that was something that he was getting at during his talk with Ben. Is that I don't blame the Spartans for what they did. I blame Oni.
Yeah, I mean, they're going through all these things on themselves. I mean, you can't really blame you're just the messenger, or basically something like that. That didn't really account. But anyway.
Yeah, don't kill the messenger type thing.
Yeah, like it's like that. I mean, they're basically brought in to do an assignment, and they're engineering themselves. They're augmenting themselves. Like, I'm sure that's painful. I'm sure everything that they're going through isn't exactly the most best feeling thing in the world. There's a lot of painful processes going through that. And I'm sure seeing that, you got to see the other side. You have to see it's not them that's doing this. It's the organization that they're hired on for or brought in for. They're the puppets that the puppeteers are commanding, or the other way around.
I know. Yeah, I think people know what you mean.
Yeah.
So you take a look at what everything is done. And up to this point, if we've read the books, I think it was either in the Kilo 5 trilogy. I think it was in the Kilo 5 trilogy that we learned that everything that Halsey had done for the Spartan program was directly assigned by Oni, or like Oni told her to do it, except for one thing. And this is the pinnacle of what Ben comes to the realization for this podcast, is that they introduce clones back into their families.
Yeah, I think that was more, I know that was there to like help, but I think that did more damage than good, honestly. It could go both ways. I mean, you're gonna have your kid that's completely gone, you know, you're always wondering where he or she ever went, you know, not knowing that. But you have these clones that are just dying left and right. Like, they don't have that long lifespan, and the parents are probably like, what's wrong? What did I do that was so wrong? Like, I create my creation, you know, my child is dying at such a young age. Like, what? I don't understand. And doctors can't sit there and physically say what's going on with them. They're seeming healthy, and all of a sudden just dying out of nowhere. That's horrible.
From the Kilo 5 trilogy, for those that remember, whenever they were bringing in Halsey to like put her away, one of the things that Admiral Perengoski, and if you haven't read the book, sorry, this is spoilers, so might want to skip ahead a minute or so, but Perengoski basically told Halsey that, yeah, we told you to do all that stuff, except the clones was your idea. We didn't exactly approve of that, and that brought more suspicion onto the program than we would have liked. If that was the case, we wouldn't be putting you away. But that's the one thing that Halsey did that Oni felt was the just cause for putting her away. And that's all it takes.
No, that's all it takes. I mean, it was really bad for what she did, but she was probably having it at her best interest at her. I mean, like, I'm sure she was thinking, like, we're taking these people's kids. She was thinking of the families.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, she was trying to do more good than it came out to be. And, like, that's... Oni didn't think of that. Oni wasn't going to be the ones that would be like, oh, well, you know, screw what the families think. We're going to get what we want out of them, and that's it. You know, at least she had an idea of trying to cover their ass, so to speak.
And they kind of backfired a little bit. As we read some in later novels, and now the fact that she's on the run. So that got Ben thinking a lot about what the implications of the clones were. And I don't remember how much detail the books go into the clone making process, but I'm pretty sure the way the clones were made, they were flash clones. They were quickly made, and they were associated with a lot of the same memories that their actual people, however you say that, their originals had. Does that make sense?
Yeah. The brain they're cloned off of, their
right,
their source or their
something.
I don't even know. Yeah, something like that.
I don't know how you technically classify that, but anyways, you take the fact that you have all these clones, and Ben actually goes to the degree of like growing the clones really fast, having scientists train them on how to walk and do all this stuff early on, and then being stuck in families where they have no idea who the families are or why they're telling them to do certain things, and then they have a terminal illness, in which case they die a couple months later, which in and of itself, just the clone thing, having them die off, that's bad on its own.
Yeah. I mean, you got to look at it like this, too. I mean, I wonder what kind of outlash that these clones were probably having, too. I mean, I'm sure they were thinking, like, why are you making me do this? You know, I didn't do this. Like, this wasn't me. Like, it makes you wonder if this was, like, if they were thinking on their own. Like, apart from the memories that they were given, it makes you wonder if they were, like, actually thinking, like, oh, well, this isn't me. Like, this is completely different. Like,
so, without knowing the book verbatim, like Grandmother One probably does, I think it was along the lines of they thought that they were the person who they were.
Okay.
I think that's how it was intended to be. And I think this is just Ben's conception of what he thinks the clones went through. I don't think this is actually what the clones went through. I think it was they were flash made. They had maybe a couple days of turnaround, and they were had the memories implanted in them enough to act like their kid. Because you would notice if your kid was acting very suspiciously or didn't really know who they were. And if you go back to the books, a lot of them didn't really, I mean, they thought that they were their kids. They didn't really notice anything wrong about them other than the fact that they were getting sick and they were terminally ill and the doctors had no idea what was wrong with them. But other than that, there were no other signs, at least mentioned in the books, where the parents didn't think their kid was their kid. And if you didn't have the memories of that person you were cloned for, you wouldn't act like that person to begin with.
Right.
So I think this is just part of Ben trying to think through this, and I don't think that's actually what happened, to clear that up for people. After going through all the ideas of what happened with these clones, there's an ominous voice coming from the other room. And this is like a little bit after. I think he's like sleeping or something, right? He was like
in the room. I think he was sleeping. Yeah, I think he was sleeping. And he said that he got woken up by the voice.
Yeah, he heard a voice from one of his computer terminals that was, I guess, monitoring communications for local networks or something. And he heard someone say, "Come in here, Ben," something like that. And then that's when he started recording. Lo and behold, Pharaoh had finally arrived. Many days later.
Yeah, many days later. The I can imagine his A, who is this person that's stalking me? B, who is this person? And then like when he finally starts talking to him, he's like, oh, that's the person you're supposed to. You're really creepy. You're not supposed to. This is how you're gonna come to contact me is through when I'm sleeping, coming through that. That would be a little unnerving.
I would have been scared out of my freaking mind.
Oh, yeah.
I would have been like, disconnect everything, power off everything. I wouldn't be the curious type of like, oh, this is someone invading my privacy. I'm going to go talk to this person. That would be one of the last things on my mind.
No. I mean, like, you would... Sorry for yawning. But, like, no. I mean, that was really... Oh man.
Creepy?
That would have... Yeah. I would have freaked... I would have ran out the house or the apartment or whatever he's in. I would have been out of there. I'd be like, nope. Yeah. Sorry.
I'm the same way, dude. I don't think, like, anyone in the right mind would be like, I'm going to go talk to this person who's summoning me into this room.
Yeah, no. Any sane person would probably be on the same level we are.
Yeah. And the voice modulation is just like add another level of eeriness to it.
Yeah.
Like, no, Ben, run.
Just get out of there. You're going to have these people running there with masks and start sticking stuff into you and knock out. And then you're going to wake up into like a laboratory or something.
Or something.
Or something like that.
Ben takes the insane route. And decides to start recording and goes into his office. And one of the first things that he recorded was Pharaoh saying, did you listen this time? Lo and behold, Pharaoh knows quite a bit about the situation going on. And he's like, yes, I finally listened and it'd be nice to blow this story out, but I have no way to do it. And Pharaoh basically tells him that this story needs to get like out there. It needs to just blow away Oni, because some of the stuff that's going out here, it's creeping up on us. Like the stuff that Mashaq was talking about, the weird things happening with computer systems going down, acting really weird. Things are happening and they need to get ahead of that. So this is that part of the story of Hunt the Truth that we don't actually know about. This is the exciting stuff for all of us lore people. We know all the story behind Master Chief and all that stuff. That's what most of this is. But it's these tiny little nuggets of like, what's actually happening out there in the outer colonies? What's this weird thing that's not the insurrectionists? That's not the United Rebel Front versus the UEG. It's not the Covenant Civil War. There's something bigger out there.
Yeah, something massive. Something that's, what'd she say, growing or strengthening, if I remember correctly? Like, it's growing, basically.
Mm-hmm. Something like that. I don't remember the exact wording. And at this point, Ben is like all on board for trying to get this story blown out, trying to just get people aware of what's happening. And Pharaoh's like, no, it's got to be bigger. It has to be blown up in Oni's faces. We got to take them out of the picture.
Yeah.
Ben's like, yeah, that'd be nice, but I have no way to do that. How do you expect me to influence that many people? And Pharaoh tells him that there are a lot of high-ranking officials, senators, that have no idea of the Spartan program or what it entails, that actually have a lot of power that could do some real damage if they heard about the story.
Right.
One of the things that Ben brings up is like, I can't exactly walk into Oni and be in the middle of a meeting between senators and Oni higher-ups and just say like, hey, here's my evidence. That's not exactly going to happen. He doesn't have the numbers and the influence of senators. Like, hey, I need you to come to Oni and need to kind of discuss this. Because one, he probably couldn't even get even close to Oni.
He would have a bullet through his head by the time he got there.
Oh, yeah. So Pharaoh comes through with that and says, we'll make the opportunity. But in order to do that, you have to get the threat of something imminent out there to really scare the population to where senators do notice something and it becomes a massive issue of unrest for people so that they can pull together this meeting and that they can pull Ben in to actually discuss what's this big bad thing that's really happening.
Exactly.
Because if senators are getting this reports of people really upset about this one guy saying stuff about something Oni's done, then of course the senators and the higher-ups can be like, okay, Oni, it's time to talk. Let's bring in the guy who's reporting on this stuff. And that's what Pharaoh is getting at. Need to get people riled up over this thing that's happening out there, this anomalies that Mashaq is getting at, couple that with everything that he's learning about the Spartan program, about Master Chief and John and all that stuff, and then blow that up in Oni's faces in front of the senators, and that way the senators and those higher-ups can make an influence on Oni.
Yeah, I mean, what is it? If you want to get news out, make a news story out of it, get attention of the public eye, in a way. I mean, like, I'm sure when people start rioting or freaking out about these truths, when things start going out, you don't want your people, your senator, you don't want your people freaking out over something. So you're going to have to try to investigate to calm everything down as it is. I mean, right. If you're going to have so many people on the same subject, that's a little unnerving, especially right. If it's negative.
And something else that Pharaoh mentions too, is everyone in the other colonies is able to hear this, and that's great. But Oni controls a lot of the intercolony communication, so you have to generate the panic, generate the fear inside the intercolonies, and that's when you're really going to get people to start making influences on the higher-ups to get them starting to panic as well. And one of the things that Pharaoh mentions is there's not time to really go through the details, because while it works well for the outer colonies, the inner colonies, it's too complex, it's too detail-oriented. It needs something that's quick and fast-burning to get that panic generated.
Yep.
Because if there's nothing else that Fox News and CNN haven't taught us,
right?
Is that an explosive title can do a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for?
Cause panic, striking fear into people's hearts, completely throwing people off guard. Just, and yeah, there's a lot of things.
A lot of quick and driving influence on people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's one other little piece to this puzzle, though, that a lot of people have been speculating on. And that is, who is Pharaoh? Now,
yeah,
the two big theories that I've seen on social networks, on Twitter, is Halsey or Cortana?
Yeah, I don't think it's Cortana. Like, Cortana wouldn't... What was Cortana's cause of doing this, though? I could see Halsey. I have a lot of faith that that is her. I've said this a couple of times, I think it's her, but... I don't see it's Cortana.
I don't either.
This doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, and one of the things I saw someone make an argument on is when she said that most of her lies down there when she's talking about Earth. So going off of that line, I think for us, we believe that Cortana's still out there, but this wouldn't be the way to really bring Cortana into the picture. So the Halsey thing sounds more likely. I think it's still too early to confirm it at that point, and not really knowing who else it could be, I guess that's kind of the best running theory to go with, because who else would know about those intricate details of Oni that we know of in the universe so far?
And who also would want to take Oni out that bad?
Right, especially after Oni tried to take her out back in Spartan Ops.
Like, I'm sure there's a lot of hatred. And I'm sure there's a lot of plotting that's been going against Oni with her.
And I guess we did kind of theorize that Pharaoh could have been Halsey back when we did our last episode. That's not completely out of the possibility, but the voice modulation really screws with it.
Oh, yeah. That's the point of it, though.
Right. I know it is. And that's pretty much the episode.
Yeah. Pretty exciting episode this time around. Like, we're getting deeper and deeper and deeper, and, like, each episode's getting better and better and better.
I like the fact that Ben finally heard the truth behind the Spartan program. He finally took that one step that he tells us he was really hesitant to make, and how so many other people were told to be hush-hush about it, and one guy, Anthony Petrovsky, stepped up and said, heck no, people need to hear what actually happened.
Yeah. Tell the people the truth. Like, there's no reason to hide this. It doesn't need to be hidden.
So, yeah, that's about it. Pretty deep stuff.
Oh, yeah. And it's just going to get even deeper.
No joke. We have at least 6 more episodes for it to get deeper.
Yep.
Who knows, man? It's interesting stuff. It's entering that stride of... Okay, now, and I guess this is where we're going to actually end up, too, is the whole blowing Oni or at least the efforts to kind of blow Oni's cover on what the Spartan program is.
Yeah.
Because before we didn't really have an idea of an end goal for the podcast, but at least now it seems like we have one. Now it's just a matter of what are the steps going to be to get to that point.
I don't know. I have no idea. It's interesting now. I'm grinding my teeth. I'm wanting more. I want it to be Sunday. I want it to be here now.
I know. Alas, we have to wait till Sunday for the next episode. Episode 8 coming down the pipe soon.
Yep.
And not to mention we have the Hunt the Signal campaign still going on. We have Transmission 2. I know that we've kind of stumbled behind after we did the Transmission 1 stuff. We talked a little bit about it on the last podcast, how far we got. There's people still working on that part of the Hunt the Signal stuff. So hopefully we'll get some info about that soon. We'll bring that up possibly on the next show or the show after that. So the Hunt the Signal stuff. And the contest is supposed to end at according to the rules, the end of this month. So we have a couple more weeks for that to go on. I don't know how long the Hunt the Signal contest is going to go. If you haven't already, you can head over to huntthesignal.com/team, create a team of 4, and then attempt the puzzles. There's quite a few people out there that are kind of summarizing what's going on and how to get through things as people are finding it out. So there's a few threads on Halo Waypoint. There's a Halo 5 IRC chat. There's a couple of Reddit threads I think people are trying to also post on there on some solutions to things. So if you get stuck at any certain point and the community has found it out, then you can just check on some of those places and figure out what to do next. So, Bio, I think that's going to be it until we reach episode 8.
Yeah, man.
This next week. Exciting stuff.
Yeah, I can't wait. I mean, I wonder what Ben's going to get himself into next week.
I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see if Mashaq comes back into the picture, which I'm assuming he is. And this is the theory I wanted to touch on before we closed off that I mentioned earlier of why Mashaq may not have been returning his calls at all. Is because of the fact that the first thing that got recorded by Ben of Pharaoh was, did you listen this time? It makes me wonder if the reason he didn't return the calls is because he wanted Ben to find out per Pharaoh's request of actually learning what actually happened.
Right. Yeah, no, it's a pretty good theory. I mean, it makes sense. It does. It makes a lot of sense.
That's the theory I'm going off of. Because that's the one thing, because Mashaq was always the one that was poking and prodding. It's like, hey, listen to me. And then he was constantly there listening to Ben after he hacked his systems. And then just to be gone after that?
Yeah, it's just a vanish. It doesn't seem, it's not right. It's not, something's off about it.
Yeah. So that makes me think that Pharaoh had said something to Mashaq. And then he just let him be alone for a little while. Then he went back to Anthony, found out what actually happened, and is now going down this path of, okay, what is the Spartan program? And that was the one question I think that he had to ask before Pharaoh would reach out to him.
Right.
And he did. He took that step.
Yep.
Actually, thinking about it now, that's another reason why Pharaoh could be Halsey, is because the one thing that Parangoski accused Halsey of was the clones. And if she can flip that back on Oni, saying that it was part of the Spartan program all along to have the clones,
that could really bring down a lot.
Then Ben is being an agent for Halsey, and if he can present that info in front of the higher-ups, the senators, that would make it really seem like it's Halsey.
Yeah.
Because if she could wipe the slate clean of that off her record, because that was the only thing that Parangoski had to really hold against her. If she could wipe that clean, her slate's basically clean.
Yeah. So, and then she can do what she wants without judgment, or basically just do what she's got. That makes me wonder, what is Halsey going to be doing next? When this is all said and done, when this is all, say for instance, this is all going according to plan, Oni gets taken out, yada, yada. What is she going to do next? Make her own organization to start doing stuff? She's a secretive person as it is.
Well, and at heart, she's a researcher. I mean, look at all the stuff that she did with researching Foreigner tech on Reach before Reach got attacked, and obviously the stuff with her interaction with the librarian and all the stuff in the Jinsky and all the stuff happening in Escalation, which I still need to catch up on. Just take a look at that. I mean, that's the, if you think about the librarian's plan for humanity as defined by the Greg Bear books and Halo 4, then humanity is supposed to be making that step into reclaiming the mantle, accessing the domain. And Halsey is basically the one spearheading that. She is the most knowledgeable of the forerunners of any human being, really.
Yeah. I mean, she has all the knowledge. I mean, not to mention she has the Janus key. Well, the one half of the Janus key.
Well, she has both halves now, and according to Escalation, right?
Yeah, Escalation. Yeah, I was kind of staying away from the spoiler on there. I forgot we kind of talked about it, but
it already got brought up in a previous podcast, so yeah. I don't know why we can't say it now.
Yeah, no, I completely forgot. But anyway, now she has the Janus key itself. It just makes me wonder what other stuff she did find out about. And it makes me wonder if this thing that is getting bigger, like this threat, I wonder if that Janus key had anything to do with that. Like her finding out or people finding out.
Yeah. I mean, again, the only thing that I could think of is the one mentioned in the Greg Bear novel of that flood influence that they had on subspace and the time space continuum as they kind of took over stuff.
Right.
Having that flood resurgence back.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if we'll see it in Halo 5, but I mean, that's the only thing that I can attribute to anything that we've seen in the past where it affects something on that grand a scale.
Yeah. I would hope to see the flood back. I miss them as an enemy. They were awesome to fight. Pain in the ass, but they're fun to fight.
Well, and I was talking to actually Twisted Shots over from Rectify when I was just earlier when I was OKC. And one of the things that I brought up to him was that one of the things that interests me in Halo was that moment where you were introduced to the flood. Because that's arguably the pinnacle moment of Halo that defined Halo, that got everyone really involved from the lore aspect. Because before then, it was the classic space battle where battling aliens that want to destroy all humanity, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The flood was the one difference that really made Halo a unique franchise, a unique universe.
You have a game or you have an enemy that is unknown. You know, we don't know anything about it. We just know that when it infects you, it ingests you and makes it one of your own. You know, you have all these different things that are going on. Like, and it's a nasty parasite. It is. Like, it's bad.
Yeah.
I wouldn't really want nothing to do with it. I mean, that music when you first heard it, that eerie, really weird music the first time you encounter it, I think that set that mood of, yeah, this is not looking good. Like, this is something that we have to look out for.
Again, something I don't know if we'll see it in Halo 5, but that's the only thing I could really attribute to anything remotely close to what we've seen in any part of Halo fiction before. And it might be something completely new, too.
Yeah.
That's the exciting part for everyone that already knows kind of the background of Chief is these two mentions of all the stuff that's happening in the Outer Colonies that is weird. Because everything else that kind of plays into the story as it is. And yeah, it's cool to see that develop. It's cool to see that Ben is collecting all this information to be publicly available within the universe, other than being kind of just the knowing it outside.
Right.
So that's cool. But this stuff of what's happening in the other colonies, that's where the gold is.
Yeah. Hopefully we see it soon. Hopefully we see it surface, unlike in Hunt the Truth.
So do I. But that will wrap it up for our podcast this week. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Remember, you can check us out on podtackler.com. While you're there, go hit us up on the forums. We have a thread talking about Hunt the Signal. We have a thread talking about Hunt the Truth, our theories, our ideas of things that are going on week to week as we count down this final half, I guess, pretty much of the Hunt the Truth podcast as we lead up to E3. So make sure you head on over there and hit us up. Give us your opinions and theories of what you think may be going on in Hunt the Truth as well. You can also check us out on our social networks. We're on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitch. And we usually broadcast our shows live on Twitch every Thursday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And we've been doing our Hunt the Truth on Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. time Eastern as well. And then when Xbox Live is working, we have our game nights on Fridays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, where we hop on the Master Chief Collection, and we'll sometimes do some other games. We'll hop on some Xbox 360 games. We'll hop on Halo 4, Halo Reach, Halo 3, Halo 3 ODST, all that kind of stuff. So make sure you check us out there. Make sure you check out our podcast network. We are part of the podcast with a K, and you can find them over at podka.st with some other podcasts like Guardian Radio, Critscast, Work in Progress, How to Murder Time, and the newest addition to the family, The Learning Cliff. Make sure you check those out if you're looking for some other gaming podcasts to listen to, or if you have an interest in any one of those games that they cover as well. There's some really good podcasts to check, so I highly recommend you go check them out. And we will be back next week for episode 8. I think we're going to get some really cool info in that podcast. So until then, everybody, keep on fragging the Spartan program.